This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
I left my heart San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me. To be well, little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care, my love waits there.
Tony Bennett and his signature song from his latest recording, MTV Unplugged. It won two Grammys this week for Record of the Year and Traditional Pop Vocal, whatever that means. We're going to feature an excerpt of our 1991 interview with him. Some singers lose their touch as they get older, but Bennett arguably became a better singer after his big hits of the 1950s and 60s. Even as he's aged, his voice might have lost some of its power and range, but his phrasing and depth are hard to surpass. One turning point in his career was his 1975 album of duets with Bill Evans. With this sensitive jazz pianist behind him instead of pop arrangements, you could really hear what Bennett could do with a song.
The night is like a lovely tune. Beware my foolish heart. How white the ever constant moon. Take care, my foolish heart. There's a line between love and fascination that's hard to see on an evening such as this. For they both give the very same sensation when you're lost in the magic of a kiss.
Tony Bennett's first record was Boulevard of Broken Dreams. You almost wouldn't recognize his voice. It was a semi-operatic performance with lots of big high notes. I asked him if there were opera records around his house when he was growing up.
There really were, because my brother was a magnificent prodigy. He was a very wonderful opera singer. They called him the Little Caruso. He was 13 and sang solo spots in the Metropolitan Opera and did radio shows in those days. That was the highest ratings. The shows were big. And he was always a guest artist on very big radio shows. We all loved opera in my home, and it was during the Depression, and, we'd buy these Caruso records and Gigli, and all these magnificent singers, Richard Tucker, and enjoy the way they sang.
So if your brother was the Little Caruso, what were you?
Well, I was the comedian, because I had to compete somehow for all that attention, and I imitated Al Jolson and Eddie Cantor. And did imitations of them, and used to break my relatives up every Sunday. They'd make a circle around my sister, my brother, and myself, and we would entertain them. And we couldn't wait for that Sunday. There was so much fun, and so much love was given to us and encouragement.
Now, your father died when you were 9. How did your mother raise the money, earn the money to bring up the children?
Well, she was an amazing lady, because she was a seamstress, and she worked so hard and raised 3 children. My older sister helped her so much and raised 2 boys, and was, we just were very close and very, well, it was just the most beautiful home life that you could ever dream of in It was different. It was sad not to have a father, and very confusing, but it's funny. It just shows you, when people love one another, how many things really work out.
How old were you when you had to go out and work for a living?
I was about 15 when I first started. I started out as a singing waiter in the Pheasant Tavern in Astoria, which is now Ricardo's.
So you had to sing in between serving or sing while you were serving?
Well, yeah, both. It was fun. It was almost chaplain-esque, you know, because I had two Irish waiters, and they were great, jolly type guys, and always wanted to encourage me, and I'd get a request to sing I'll Get By or a song like that, and I'd run into the kitchen to get... I know if I sang it, I'd get an extra tip, so they'd teach it to me just right on the spot, and I'd come out singing it. And I used to love doing that. You know, it was just so much fun every weekend when I sang there.
You had an uncle, I think, who was in vaudeville. Did your uncle's stories make you want to go into show business? Did it seem like fun to you?
Well, you know, he was a very wise psychologist as far as I'm concerned, because his name was Dick Gordon, and Dick Sorace, but his stage name was Dick Gordon. And he was really my father, and I didn't know it. I mean, he would just say, after supper, why don't you come and meet me under the lamppost on the street corner? And he would just hang out and talk to me and tell me these legends. And what an influence he was, because he kind of gave me all the rules and what kind of person I should be if I go into show business. And he warned me that, he said, I don't think you're ever going to make it because you have a rasp in your voice. He said, and if you're a singer, you're not going to make it if you sing. And I don't know, he just gave me a fine tuning as to what attitude I should have when I perform and how careful I really have to be about everything.
Well, how did telling you had a rasp in your voice and therefore you'd never make it as a singer help you?
Well, John Barrymore once said, the harder the slap, the greater the artist.
Were you self-conscious about this thing that your uncle had pointed out to you?
Did absolutely. I mean, I taught how to... Louis Belson, the great drummer, you know, Pearl Bailey's husband, the late Pearl Bailey, he kind of taught me how to breathe, and so that when I sing, the rasp is not heard at all. And it's just a matter of breathing before you before a phrase that you sing, you see.
We're featuring a 1991 interview with Tony Bennett. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Before we return to our 1991 interview with Tony Bennett, let's hear another song from his Grammy Award-winning record, MTV Unplugged.
I'm thinking maybe, baby, I'll go away. Someday, someway, maybe you'll come and say, it's you that I need, and you'll be pleading in vain. It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around and finally found there's somebody who could make me be true, could make me be blue. Even be glad just to be sad, thinking of you. Some others.
You are really among the most respected singers today, and certainly of your generation. And I mean, among the things you're respected for is not only the beauty of your voice and the depth of your phrasing, but also your repertoire, your choice of songs, your understanding of what makes a song good. In the 50s and 60s, up until around 1965, you had so many records on the charts. You know, you were recording about three albums a year, and a lot of the singles were big hits on the charts. Your last chart hit was in 1965, If I Ruled the World. And after that, rock and roll really took off, you know, monopolized the charts pretty much. What were those years
in the latter part of the 60s like for you? Were you trying very hard to land something else on the charts, or had
no.
you pretty much given up on
no,
that?
I kind of walked away from it. I thought it was, I saw it as a fiasco. It became more and more Madison Avenue programming, you know, just a marketing thing. I've got this wonderful craving, you know, a friend of mine, John Brasher, he's a dancer, and he said to me, God, you paint every day. He said, why don't you stretch out and make it an occupation? So about 35 years ago, I just took him up on that, and I started painting and going toward selling my paintings and all that and having gallery showings. And then it allowed me to become a performer because I always had deadlines up until then. I had to do, like you say, 3 albums a year and hit singles and all that, and I was really just into the record business, and I just walked away from it. I personally wasn't rejected. I was the one who decided to take a walk, and what happened was very helpful. I learned that things work out for the best because what happened is I learned how to perform on stage a lot better. Now that I'm recording, my son Danny was responsible for getting a contract where they trust me, and I just hand in the record. And thank God for him, because it's allowed me the freedom to just express myself freely. And I'm very happy with the recording scene in my personal life right now.
You are a singer who, it seems to me, keeps getting deeper into songs as you, the longer you sing.
Right.
That your phrasing just seems to become, to have more emotional depth all the time.
You know why that happened? I think I have the answer to that. It's so funny. When I used to sit around the house and watch my mom, who just made one dress after another, working on a, you know, record-breaking time to make us sew as many dresses as she can, so she'd make a little more money for us to live by. And that every once in a while she would stay very calm and very concentrated on what she was doing, but every once in a while she'd get angered, and she would take a dress and throw it over her shoulder, and she'd say, "Don't have me work on a bad dress." She says, "If you give me a good dress, I don't mind doing this." She said, "But don't have me ever work on a bad dress, on a cheap dress." And that's why I've just decided never to compromise. I think that's what it came from. I saw that, you know, she was able to sustain because she stayed with good quality. And I asked Sinatra one time, I said, "Why do you think that we've sustained so long through the years?" He said, "That's because we stayed with good songs." So I think when you do something of quality, somehow or other, you may not be on top of the charts, but you're always respected and you always have a place in society by doing something that's made very well.
How do you think getting older is changing your voice? And if your voice is changing, how do you think that's changing how you approach a song and how you phrase the lyrics?
Yeah, well, Bobby Hackett taught me to work on bel canto scales every day, and so I've been able to obtain 4 or 5 more notes on the bottom of my register. So now I'm a baritone tenor, and I take good care of my voice and myself.
How do you work through a song when you decide to do a new one? Do you have your music director at the piano, and do you work it through with him first?
Well, I try to save him a lot of time, so when I first hear a song, I'll have him put it on tape for me, a little cassette, and then I just learn it that way so that we don't have to go over and over it in the studio. And then when I learn it, then I start doing it in front of an audience and get an audience reaction. Let's see how the audience likes it. And then if they like it and I like it, and I think, I always say to myself, if this is going to become a hit, will I be able to enjoy this song by singing it every night? And that's the test I give it. It's a tough test, but it has to have a very musical structure to it, so that if I have to sing a song every night, it's something that I won't ever mind doing.
I guess some singers are really haunted by their hits. They never really like the song, and now they're forced to sing it one way or another every time they perform.
Right, and that's incorrect. You know, it shouldn't. That's when you pick an inferior song. If you have a good song, you don't mind doing it every night.
Tony Bennett, recorded in 1991.
They say that falling in love is wonderful. It's wonderful.
so they say. And with a moon up above, it's wonderful. It's wonderful, so they tell me. I can't recall who said it. I know I never read it. I only know they tell me that love is grand, and the thing that's known as romance is wonderful, wonderful in every way, so they say.
This is Fresh Air.